Welcome to Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that takes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Laura Snapes.
And I'm Fraser McAlpine.
And on this week's agenda, a lack of style singularity plus a consideration of the One Direction boys' solo careers, the actual top 10, and beef ahoy in this week's new releases. Fraser, how has your week been?
My week has been fantastic. I'm in a band. We do cover versions and of pop songs and play weddings. You know, it's a functions band. And there's a bar in Foy called The Galleon where we sometimes play. And there's a crowd that go to that pub. They just sort of arrive and start dancing. And then they all start kissing each other and touching each other in a strange, really intimate way. It's like a gay, straight mishmash of people. And if I'm saying that in a slightly confused way, as if they're all just one amorphous mass of people, it's because that's how they were presented to me whilst playing in the guitar in this band and standing at the front and singing. Suddenly there's this gang of people and they're all copping off. And you couldn't work out who was with who or anything like that. It was really difficult to see. And they had the best time. Anyway, two of them got married and we played at their wedding. And that was fantastic. It was lovely to see everybody. And they all went nuts just like they always do. And then we're playing another wedding of two of them in 3 weeks time, and then in September we're playing at the third wedding of two more of them because we're like their pet band, and
that's brilliant.
It's a wonderful thing. It's an incredible thing. So yeah, it's been a great weekend.
This sounds much more fun than what I've got up to. Though on Thursday I did go to Brighton for the Great Escape for the day, where I left the house and it was perfect sunshine and I thought, oh, I'm gonna have a nice sunny day by the seaside, and then as soon as I got there it started lashing down. But I sat on a panel with some very nice people, including Mark Savage from the BBC, and we had a nice chat about whether or not there was a crisis in music journalism, and concluded no. So it's all safe. Nobody needs to worry. It's absolutely fine.
I love that your whole panel discussion is like, is everything all right? Yeah, I think we're fine. Same time next year. All right. Okay, bye.
So as people who listen to every episode may have noticed, we have not really dedicated very much attention to Harry Styles' debut solo album yet, because we were waiting to see whether it was going to have the same kind of effect on the top 40, or indeed the top 20, as Ed Sheeran's album did, which is now 11 or 12 weeks ago, because that's when we started this podcast. And as we perhaps suspected, although Harry Styles' debut album is number one in the albums chart, it has not achieved a style singularity in the same way that Ed did. Nothing like it, really. He only has one song in the top 40, which is Sign of the Times, and the rest of the tracks appear from number 46 to 99, from which we can conclude that Woman is the least popular song on the album, and perhaps rightly so, as it is a little bit too much like The Last Shadow Puppets for my liking. We tried to pinpoint some reasons for this. Fraser, why do you reckon this hasn't taken off in the same way as Ed Sheeran's album has?
I think this is a transitional period for him where he has to make the move from being part of a teen pop fandom-based environment to a new kind of adult listening experience, and I think that's automatically less exciting. He has to develop the fans that Ed Sheeran has that are not fans. They're not fandom fans. He has to develop people who just like the songs and the tunes. And maybe Sign of the Times wasn't the song to do that with, although it had its own effect.
Yeah, totally. I do like the album, but it's totally out of step with the sound of the times. You know, he's not making dance bangers. He's not making Tropical House or anything that's a bit more dancehall influence like most people in his kind of position are. But I feel like with this album, you can hear a young man exercising his classic rock love for the first time and trying to make things that feel proximate to the stuff that he's really into. Most of the songs on the album, I've got a pretty direct analogue in the annals of classic rock, whether it's Steeler's Wheel or a Bowie track or Pink Floyd or something like that. But for me, I think the best songs on the album are ones like Two Ghosts and From the Dining Table, which are smaller, much lower key songs that I think have more in common with Nashville songwriting, like country music songwriting, than any hard rock stuff. I think those are the two songs on the album where you actually hear a tiny bit of what it is actually like to be Harry Styles, which for everything that's projected onto him, we don't really have too, like, he's very carefully guarded about what we actually know about him. And I mean, it makes sense that music like that is not having a particularly big mainstream moment, I suppose. And he could be writing, yeah, he could be writing the best songs possible in those genres, but there are still thousands of people who wouldn't be caught dead listening to a Harry Styles record because of all the cultural baggage that it brings with it.
No, and specifically not a Harry Styles record that sounds like Pink Floyd.
Yeah.
Because so many of One Direction... I mean, One Direction's whole shtick for a while was nicking bits of classic rock tracks and making new pop songs out of them. So mm-hmm. they were already infuriating people that were into classic rock. There's definitely some outrage expressed when the sort of vault of classic rock ideas is pilfered in order to create new pop songs. And yet I think that's massively valid. It's a really good idea. The trick is how you do it, not whether you should. Mm-hmm. And certainly no classic rock songwriter worth their salt was above stealing ideas from other people. So it's part of a, if you want to look at it in terms of a pantheon, it's practically insisted upon in rock lore.
Yeah, I really want to recommend, if anybody wants to read more about Harry Styles, if you have not had your fill over the past few weeks, there is the most fantastic piece written about the way that he uses rock masculinity, which went up on NPR last week, written by the great critic Anne Powers. I think the article is just called Styles of the Times, and it is just a fantastic breakdown of how he's using rock and masculinity and sexuality within what he's doing. It is just one of the most amazing pieces of music criticism I've probably ever read. And also, it ties in really, really nicely with a listener review that we've been sent by Alfie, who is, I think, a long-term listener, and they have sent in this.
Hi, I'm Alfie. It's becoming increasingly apparent that we aren't going to get a Styles apocalypse, and I think, looking at their respective roles in popular culture, that's not particularly surprising. Ed's whole shtick is that he's a real bloke who makes real music, and so the focus has to be on the musical success, not his general cultural exposure, because otherwise that narrative just falls down. It's been a really long time since Harry was even the cheeky boy band chappy next door, but Ed Sheeran is just desperate to be the everyman, which is something that Harry has very clearly sidestepped. Anna wrote that amazing article about the femme imagery of his album art. He's wearing shirts like Perfume Genius, suits like Christine and the Queens, that jumpsuit he wore in Corden that was really reminiscent of Annie Lennon. And that's what people are consuming, this performative queer-coded femininity. And for queer Twitter, that's really exciting, but it's not something that actually continues into his music, which is kind of disappointingly heterosexual. And it doesn't have Ed's broad strokes appeal, so it's not going to translate into high streaming figures, I don't think.
Thank you very much, Alfie. I think there are some really interesting ideas in here. I have felt a bit funny maybe over the past month about seeing the way that Harry Styles really, really kind of like queer codes himself, wearing beautiful blouses and having his hair all nice and tousled, and also being like deliberately very ambiguous about his sexuality. I forget the publication, but he did say recently that he didn't feel a need to put a label on it, which just feels a bit like being able to, you know, shore up his own ambivalence for the sake of his brand and sustaining the kind of queer interest levels that he has. But then, like Alfie says, he doesn't really follow through with it on the record, which I think people had hoped would be maybe a bit more flamboyant or a bit more like Queen or something like that. I don't think anybody expected him to go full on Perfume Genius. But this also ties into, I think, my own limitations when it comes to analysing what Harry Styles is up to. The only lenses that I see Harry Styles fandom through are music journalists on Twitter, many of whom have, who seem quite into this transformation and seem to want to kind of like give him the benefit of the doubt with what he's doing. He might not, like me, he might not have been particularly bothered one way or the other by One Direction before. And then the other side I see of it is the Harry Styles fans Twitter account, or Harry Styles updates, which is, you know, the most precise, exacting fan account that picks up on any single mention of him, including when we mention him on this podcast. And then you get to see the kind of fanatical side of it through that. So that middle ground, like we were talking about, like you were saying, Fraser, like casual listeners, I don't really have a handle of how he sits just in like the lumpen mainstream middle, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the problem is that his story is just, I've come back with a solo album. And the only attempt that has been made to tell any kind of story on top of that is the possibility that Two Ghosts might be about Taylor Swift. Because mm-hmm. everything else is literally, Harry's back among us. And that doesn't sustain interest for very long. And certainly if you were never that impressed with One Direction, you know that he's a famous person and that he's made a new record, but that isn't enough. Mm-hmm. Anybody that wishes to generate the kind of appeal of an Ed Sheeran, the non-fandom appeal of someone like an Ed Sheeran, you know, the music has to do a lot of the legwork. And I find it really interesting because I was spellbound from the minute Sign of the Times started. I think it's an exceptional song, and I think a lot of the cultural theory that's come along since listening to that song is all very interesting, and it is, you know, it's all worth saying. But it doesn't make me feel any differently about listening to that song. That song is, you know, a special musical moment in recorded sound. But if people aren't hearing that the way that I'm hearing it, then he's really got his work cut out.
Another article, we'll stick links to these in the show notes, by the way, but another article that I read, which was totally along those lines this week, the indie rock musician Mitski, who is very brilliant in her own right, wrote an article for the great website The Talk House, which is where musicians write about other music, and she wrote about Harry Styles and the beauty of how he's just this great big screen for projection, which I really, really recommend. It was great. We have had an email in from Al Horner, who edits a brilliant Fact Mag, and he writes, long-time listener, first-time caller. First, thanks for last week's revelation, to me at least, that Missy Elliott once had a verse on a Mel B solo single. Al, how could you forget? That has got to go down next to Jay-Z's forgotten collab with Another Level, Be Alone No More, in pop history's most baffling instances of genuine megastars guesting with now slightly naff-seeming British artists. I had a question for you. Now all five of One Direction have released solo singles. What is the official, definitive Unbreak My Chart ranking of each member's debut solo tracks?
Right, knuckles cracked. We're going in. It's a
together.
Top five, worst to best. At number five, this week's new entry, Strip That Down by Liam Payne featuring Quavo. You feel the same as well. You know I used to be in 1D. Now I'm free. People want me for one thing. That's not me. I'm not changing the way that I used to be. I just want to have fun. Running. Get rowdy. One coke and Bacardi. Sipping lightly. When I walk inside the party. Girls on me. F1 type Ferrari. Six kiss me. Girl, I love it when your body grinds on me. Oh, yeah. Baby. Oh. You know I love it when the music's loud. But come on, strip that down for me. Baby. Now there's a lot of people in the crowd. But only you can dance with me. So put your hands on my body. And swing that crown for me. Baby. You know I love it when the music's loud. But come on, strip that down for me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh. And when he says strip that down, he's not talking about restoring antiques. Although, the song melodically heavily references It Wasn't Me by Shaggy, which is now 17 years old. So in a way, he is restoring an antique.
I hate this song so much. There are so many objectionable parts to it. I mean, I think part of my perception of Liam Payne just comes from that brilliant Observer profile of One Direction, which I think is probably from 2 years ago now, but he just comes across as the most joyless one. He's like the dad of the band. Anytime one of the other ones threatens to say something mildly interesting, he cuts across them and just says something like, yeah, we just really love our fans. So much that the journalist has to say, I really get it. You really love your fans. You don't have to keep telling me. But anyway, in this song, among the many objectionable parts, he sings, I want to have fun and get rowdy. One Coke and Bacardi, sipping lightly.
That's how fun and rowdy he gets.
Exactly. I mean, I would never want to suggest that one needs to have any Coke and Bacardis to have a good time, but I think I would need like several pitchers of them to have a good time to this terrible, smug, one-man circle jerk that kind of rips off Shape of You but also makes it look like high art at the same time, because this song is so horrible. At number four is Just Hold On by Steve Aoki and Louis Tomlinson.
Which, let's be fair, none of us remember. Who remembers this song existed?
I had no idea it ever existed. It's really bad, and it could be by absolutely everybody, but it is not Liam Payne's Strip It Down, so it's going in at number four.
That's we roll hard, but we roll fair. That's how we do it on Unbreak My Chart. So at number three is This Town by Niall Horan. And I want to tell you everything, words I never got to see the first time around. And I remember everything from when we were the children playing in this fairground. Wish I was there with you now. As if the whole world was watching, I'd still dance with you. Drive highways and byways to be there with you. Oh,
truth, everything comes back to you. You still make me nervous when you walk in the room. Them butterflies, they come alive when I'm next to you. Over and over, the only truth, everything comes back to you.
No, I think this definitely has a bit of a touch of the like nizzloppy Ed Sheeran to it, but there's something kind of quite genuinely sweet about it. It reminds me also a tiny bit of Harry's From the Dining Table, which we were just talking about, but with a few less kind of masturbatory revelations.
I think the only thing that's drastically wrong with it, I don't like it very much, but I think the only thing that's drastically wrong with it is that it's such an Ed Sheeran footstep follow. Everything about that song is expected, and it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't exceed the expectations of the form at all. And so, you know, you just get sort of stuck thinking, oh, I've heard a song like this before. You seem nice. When this is finished, I'm going to go and do something else.
Now, I don't know if we agree on the top two. I don't think we do. So, no. Unfortunately, I don't think we can give you a definitive Unbreak My Chart top One Direction's debut solo singles. How do you want to do this?
You've written this list, so we'll do it according to your rankings that I don't agree with. And at number two is Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, which is wrong.
Why do you think it is wrong?
None of the other singles that we've talked about in this top five have hit me as hard as Sign of the Times has. I've played it to death. It has a magic to it that continually works every time I play it, and it is great.
I totally agree. I do really, really like the song, but there is another one that I like better. But if anybody was listening last week, you may have heard Anna from Brazil, who gave us a great review of Despacito and an explanation of why it had gotten so popular. She wrote a review of Harry's debut album, and she really kindly sent me a translation of it, and it was brilliant. And there was one paragraph in it that I really, really loved. She was talking about how the song's apocalyptic vibe feels really relevant to our times, but she points out that, as we've covered a couple of times, Harry does not even seem to know what it's about. He's always making up different explanations about its origin. But she writes, maybe Harry Styles does not know what inspired his song after all. An anthem is never born an anthem. Maybe zeitgeist can only really be captured as lightning in a bottle with no consciousness of the action. Maybe only adolescence in its sound and fury is capable of and brave enough to create the now. Which I just think is amazing.
Yeah.
It makes me think how much great music writing we must miss out on because it's in languages that us English chumps have not bothered to learn.
Most of it, I would have thought. I love the idea. I certainly don't think that he has or has ever had a clue as to what Sign of the Times it is as a song and what effect it can have. I think, you know, that's sort of the beauty of the song, that it's so non-specific in its narrative, but that it describes a particular emotional state with real pin-sharp accuracy that is universal.
And, well, Phrase is number two, but my number one is Pillow Talk by Zayn.
I love to hold you close tonight and always. I love to wake up next to you. So we'll piss off the neighbors in the place that feels the tears, the place you lose your fears. Yeah, reckless behavior. A place that is so pure, so dirty and rough. In the better day, better day, better day. No skinny and fighting, no. It's a paradise and it's a war zone. It's a paradise and it's a war zone. Pillow talk.
You and I have talked quite a lot about pop songs that make us cry for surprising reasons and unexpected reasons when they just creep up on you. And I've got several shameful ones like Elvis Ain't Dead by Scouting for Girls and If You're Not the One by Daniel Bedingfield. And it happened to me with Pillow Talk by Zayn. I had heard this song a few times and thought it was quite nice. I'm not really that bothered about it either way. But I think it was in a cab one day and not in a particularly, you know, fragile emotional state, but this song came on and that enormous swoop, like where he says, let's piss off the neighbours or whatever he says in the chorus, just made me start weeping involuntarily. And I do get something kind of similar from the huge leap into the Stop You Crying, It's a Sign of the Times part of the chorus. But but it hasn't made me cry involuntarily. And for the sheer involuntary crying moment, I would put Zayn at number one. So this week's actual top 10, at number 10, finally on its way out, Galway Girl by Ed Sheeran. My pretty little Galway girl.
Is this the last week in the top 10 for our nemesis? Only the fans can decide that. But the video didn't seem to make much of a difference in the end, and certainly it has yet to overtake Shape of You, which we've been predicting that it would do from quite early doors on this podcast, and is proof that we're not the sages and wise people that we claim to be.
I'm so happy to be proven wrong on that one.
Number 9 is Did You See by J-Hus. Some round thing that I can put my paws on. Did you see what I done? Came in a black Benz, left in the white one. I'm just a hoodlum, I came with my bones. I'm a nigga, wanna try some. Did you see what I done? Came in a black Benz, left in the white one. I'm just a hoodlum, I came with the bones. I'm a nigga, wanna try some. Came smelling like I robbed a 9 bar. Looking for the baddest diva. Hold up, let me analyze her. Body looking like a hypnotizer. Come let me try some, so you can climb on. Oh, you're a shy one, who you tryna hide from? Baby, jump in a black ride and put your friend in a white one.
I have to admit, J-Hus is pretty new to me over the past couple of weeks. I read about him via long profiles in Noisy and in The Fader, both of which were really good. The one on The Fader was written by a guy called Jace Clayton, who recently published a really excellent book called Uproot, Travels in 21st Century Music and Digital Culture, which is about how diasporic sounds spread across the world. In this piece, he highlighted a number of details that I thought were really interesting. J-Hus is a super young guy. He spent a tiny little bit of time in prison last year for possessing a weapon, I think. He got out and he made his first appearance back on stage at the O2 with Popcan at a Red Bull event, which made everybody go crazy. Something that I thought, a couple of other things that I thought were really interesting. He is currently banned from performing his own promoted shows in London for fear of public disturbance. I think for that reason, he recently played a show in like Hatfield or Stevenage or like one of the really awful towns really near where I live, just because it's the closest he can play to London without getting in trouble, which is all down to incredibly racist police legislation that basically just lets them shut down shows by like young black artists, which is terrible. But the story that I thought was really interesting was when he was in jail briefly, he ended up in altercations a couple of times, you know, just kind of typical jail fights. And at one point, when he was in one of these fights, everybody started ribbing him because he had made some quite light-hearted songs, and they started taking the piss out of one in particular. And the writer wrote about how jail allows no room for vulnerability or lightheartedness, and that the playful spirit of this song that they were taking the mickey out of had become a liability. And I mean, I really like this Did You See song, and it is kind of a really beautiful, lighthearted song. And I might be reading totally the wrong thing into this, but I really like the idea that this guy has his freedom, and he has his freedom to make a song that is a little bit lighter. It almost feels like a celebration or something of maybe something that he was denied or didn't feel like he could get away with for a time.
It's interesting because my response to not knowing any of that, my response to just listening to the song was to think, oh, that tropical thing that is so part of current popular music, he's made that sound worried. So even his version of lighthearted is translated into, you know, from the perspective of the giddy thrills of Trop House, it sounds like a downbeat and slightly introverted or worried version of that really happy noise.
At number 8 is Unforgettable by French Montana and Swae Lee. 7 is Swallow by Jason Derulo featuring Nicki Minaj and Ty Dolla Sign. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Swallow, la, la.
Freaky, freaky. Yeah. Which, to quote from Vivian Stanchel's Sir Henry at Rawlinson End, is inedible muck and there wasn't enough of it.
I just read an interesting news report. According to research published in the journal Sexuality and Culture, pop songs are now less likely to be about love than at any point since the 1960s, which, you know, you can, it looks like a flashy news angle, but it's kind of like a steadily decreasing curve as opposed to any kind of particularly dramatic or interesting drop off, I think.
But at the moment, everybody seems to be terribly caught up in their own feelings, and that seems to be coming through more and more in songs. So my initial response, and this is what I've written in our running order to Laura mentioning this research saying pop songs are now less likely to be about love, was literally just, does narcissism count? Because self-love is everywhere, and we'll get to that further up the top 10.
At number 6 is Sign of the Times by Harry Styles, which I don't think we need to play this one again. It's up from 10 because people have been listening to the album on streaming services.
At number 5 is Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. I'm in love with the shape of you. We push and pull like a magnet do. Although my heart is falling too. I'm in love with your body. Last night you were in my room. My bedsheets smell like you. Every day discovering something brand new. I'm in love with your body.
Pretty much holding fast, that one's not going anywhere. At number 4 is There's Nothing Holding Me Back by Shawn Mendes. Oh, I've been shaking, I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions, baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation, manipulate my decisions, baby, there's nothing holding me back.
Technically, there are 3 songs holding you back, Shawn Mendes, and we'll get to them now. Number 3 is Symphony by Clean Bandit featuring Zara Larsson. I just want to be part of your symphony. Will you hold me tight and not let go? Symphony. Like a love song on the radio. Will you hold me tight and not let go? Number 2 is I'm the One by DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, who is really pop's most valuable player at the moment, Chance the Rapper, and Lil Wayne. I'm the one early morning in the dawn, know you wanna ride now. I'm the one, yeah, I'm the one, yeah. Hear you sick of all those other imitators. Don't let the only real one intimidate ya. See you watch them, don't run out of time now. I'm the one, yeah, ooh, 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 ooh. I'm the one. I caught the very first shot of the video. The first shot of that is of a director's chair, an establishing shot of director's chair, which has got executive producer Asad Khaled embroidered on the back of it, which sort of works as a visual metaphor for the unappealing self-regard that is runs throughout this song, like words in the stick of Blackpool Rock. It's, I mean, literally no one cares that you're the executive producer. No one cares. No one cares. And no one cares that people who are rapping in this song think that they're the best in the whole world. It's mindless self-regard, and it's really, really, really unpleasant to listen to.
And at number 1 this week, holding fast from last week, is Despacito by Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee, featuring Justin Bieber. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo.
Now, this is sounding better week on week. What do you think, Laura? It's growing on me more and more as the weeks go by.
Yeah, I have no problem with this whatsoever. I am approaching the point where I may purchase it myself so I can listen to it for fun.
I think Justin Bieber is frustratingly good at singing. And I say frustrating because he almost breaks down that brittle shell that he's put around himself, that shell of disdain through which he seems to view the entire world, including his own fan base. Except it always, when he's singing, and he's singing well, it always feels like a throwdown, like, or a challenge. you know, aren't I great? Look at me, aren't I great? You know, there's self-regard even when he's emoting. He's emoting in a look at me, showy-offy kind of way. Not in a Whitney Houston showy-offy way, just like, I can get so much raw emotion into my singing that makes you just go, oh, shut up.
I do think that's kind of what works about it, though. And also, I think that's what Liam Payne is trying to do in that awful solo single. You can hear the way he's singing is laced with contempt, but it just kind of contributes to the general smug vibe that he has. Whereas with Bieber, we know and accept that he's a terrible boy, but something about his angelic voice keeps us coming back.
Now it's time to have a look at the new releases that may be troubling the top 10 in future weeks. And to start off with Katy Perry is back again for the third time in not very long with Swish Swish.
Your game is tired, you should retire. You're bad as cute as an old coupon expired. And karma's not a liar, she keeps receipts. So keep calm, honey, I'ma stick around for more than a minute. Get used to it. Funny, my name keeps coming at your mouth, cause I stay winning.
So that's Swish Swish by Katy Perry. She's got beef. And as soon as Katy Perry starts slanging anybody off in song, the gossip will start that this is about Taylor Swift. And as Laura said earlier, and I wholeheartedly endorse that opinion, writing songs about Taylor Swift is the single most boring thing that anyone can do in 2017. Only people who work for gossip websites care whether there is a song about Taylor Swift. And what frustrates me, if that is the case and it is about Taylor Swift, is that no one will assess the song for what it is. They will just talk about the subject matter and whether it has gossip attached to it. And it's frustrating because people don't talk about music as music enough, and it makes it even harder to, because you've got to have the backstory. This is the equivalent of the X Factor backstory, but for a pop song.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I kind of was rooting for Katy Perry to come back with something really good. I thought that Taylor Swift behaved in a pretty craven way during the American election. She didn't endorse anybody apart from, maybe she did when she went to vote and she was wearing a jumper with shoulders cut out of it like Hillary Clinton once wore in the 70s, which is the most tenuous endorsement, if it even was one. But I thought that Katy Perry came out and she made statements and she supported Hillary Clinton. And although she's always seemed a bit basic, she seemed a bit more, I don't know, just like a naively nice person than Taylor Swift, maybe. This is probably evidence of how naive I was, because I now do not believe this to be the case whatsoever. I wanted her to, you know, when she said that she was coming back with purposeful pop, it felt a bit earnest and a bit clunky, but it was like, okay, well, you seem to have a good idea here. Like, surely the whole point of, like, making a really, really imperious diss track is to make something that sounds so terrifyingly brilliant and visionary that the person it's aimed at just starts quaking and thinking, oh, God, I'm really going to have to come back with something good to defeat this. I can only imagine Taylor Swift is, like, dying laughing at this song that sounds like a leftover from the debut Disclosure album with a kind of cheap anonymous dance vocal chucked over the top. The lyrics on it that are supposedly dissing Taylor Swift are so bad, I don't think they would even have made it onto Daphne and Celeste's Ooh Stick You. where she sings, your game is tired, you should retire, you're about as cute as an old coupon expired, which is so clunky, it sounds like Yoda wrote it. Karma's not a liar, she keeps receipts. I mean, I'm still going to listen to the rest of the album, I'm really curious to see what it's going to be like. And I have admittedly ended up liking Chain to the Rhythm and Bon Appetit, but I will not be spreading like a buffet to let Swish Swish into my life. I only dropped that in there because last week I said something else about spreading like a buffet, and Fraser was so outraged that he cut it out. So we'll see if it makes it through this week's edit.
I didn't. We said after it was entirely said after the recording. I don't censor you, Laura, but I absolutely did make a sick noise immediately afterwards. The thing is as well, like, what's going to happen next, right? And this is a depressing vision of pop future, is that Taylor Swift is going to release a new album at some point. It's going to be strip mined for references to any girl or woman Taylor Swift has ever met that she's not particularly thrilled by. And everybody's going to say that girl is Katy Perry. and it's going to make the whole thing continue. Oh, now she's written a song about Katy Perry, and in this song she says something vague that could be insulting. And then Katy Perry's going to release a single that says something vague that could be insulting to Taylor Swift. Basically, this thing takes off when Nicki Minaj turns up, and nobody worries about who Nicki Minaj is talking about, because A, she makes it quite obvious when she's got beef with people, and B, she's really good at telling people off, and it really works. So this is all vague and nonsensical. So the only thing I'm going to do is to talk about actually the song itself, and just help anybody that's listened to that song and gone, what is that vocal sample? They know what they know. What is that from? It's from Fatboy Slim's Star 69. And Fatboy Slim sampled it from a Roland Clark song called I Get Deep.
Fatboy Slim, Shaggy, what a week for samples and tributes.
Modern pop music is the best in the world. The other new release that's out this week that's worth talking about in our new release section, at least, is In the Name of Man by Plan B, and it sounds like this. Blood that's on your hands, is it to stay?
I think he was interviewed on Mr. Jam this week, Mr. Jam Show, and he said that he wrote this song 10 years ago and it was inspired by the deaths of innocent children in wars, by which I interpret this is his diss track towards maybe Tony Blair and George W. Bush. Seems a bit out of date, but kind of as with Sign of the Times, the lyrics are broadly applicable enough that they could be fired at any despot. I've never enjoyed the output of Plan B. This is fine, but as we both agree, it sounds just like Rag and Bone Man, and I think he's spawned an imitator who is going to cause him competitive problems.
I have enjoyed quite a few Plan B songs. I particularly like Stay Too Long, the first single off of the Emancipation of whatever that song is, whatever that album is called.
Strickland Banks.
It's a Strickland Banks album. Defamation, is it? Something happens to Strickland Banks in that album, but it's got a long word at the beginning and I can never remember what it is. I think it's interesting currently that gospel has become a signifier of authenticity in the way that the blues always used to be. And so if you really want to prove to people that you're speaking from the heart, you bring in the gospel choir and you sort of churn out that kind of sky-boiling drama of gospel to really release your internal feelings. James Arthur does it. Rag and Bone Man does it. Oh, the interesting thing about Rag and Bone Man, I wrote on our running order, just to keep it short, I wrote Rag and Bone Man as in initials, but it comes out as R&B Man. And then I was just like, oh, is he deliberately Rag and Bone Man? So he's like, I'm an R&B man. And I thought that might be him being clever, but I have no reason to believe that that is the case. I just liked it.
What, that he's clever or that he intended that?
I have no reason to believe that that man is clever, and I'm standing by that statement. I just was pleased. I spotted a pattern in some letters.
Well done. Fraser, what is your most streamed song this week?
Right, now, I wanted to do a whole podcast based on this one song alone. I've fallen in love, Laura. This is not just the song I've listened to most this week. It's the only song I've listened to this week. And it is Bad Liar by Selena Gomez. Oh, I'm trying, I'm trying.
I'm a bad liar. And oh, baby, let's make reality, actuality, a reality. Oh, baby, let's make
Now, I knew this would be my song of the week from about halfway through the first listen. I got halfway through this song and went, I need to listen to this again as soon as it finishes. It's got the bass line from Psycho Killer by Talking Heads, but cleverly, the structure of the song is Found a Job by Talking Heads. So it's two Talking Heads songs stuck together, and even more cleverly, the melody that's stuck on the top of it is totally different. It's not a Talking Heads melody whatsoever. It's got something of Sugar Babes Mark 1, the best Sugar Babes for my money, in there too. The I'm trying chorus is sort of generally, and there's, you know, it's quite Sugar Babes-y, and it's sort of got Overload vibes all the way through it. It speaks to a moment in British pop history where we were making exceptionally good frosty pop with female lead singers, and so it's got bits that remind me of Betty Boo in there. It's got bits that remind me of Rachel Stevens, of Girls Aloud, of the Spice Girls, and she sings the line "Oh baby, let's make reality" beautifully, like she is fracturing from within. It is perfect from start to finish. Even the weird lines are funny and brilliant. So just like the Battle of Troy, there's nothing subtle here. It's an exceptionally odd line, but it just works. And the way that she sings "Call me an amenity," because she's talking about renting out the king size space in her life, so i.e. she needs a king in her life, i.e. you, mister. But the way she sings it sounds like she's singing "Call me and a manatee." So she wants a sea mammal in her bedroom as a king. All of it is wonderful. And I've listened to it over and over and over and over and over again for days and have been blissfully happy the whole time. Come at me, Laura.
Well, you sold me on it. I've only listened to it once and I thought, just to play devil's advocate, this sounds a bit like Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines.
Now, but the thing about Blurred Lines is there is nothing wrong with Blurred Lines apart from all of the lyrics.
Yes, so exactly.
Musically, Blurred Lines is great. So the bits that sound like Blurred Lines are the bits that aren't the problematic bits.
Yes, well, yeah, good point. And I did like it and I will go back to it. My most streamed track this week is something that was brand new to me. This is Being Special by Sophia Kennedy.
I've been here many times before, fell from upstairs to the bottom of the door. Being lonely makes you special, but being special makes you lonely too, said the girl on the television news. I was wondering, is she talking about me?
So earlier this week I was up late working and I wanted something. I don't listen to a ton of electronic music. I have a very small pool of albums that I put on when I really need to concentrate and focus my brain and kind of reset my impulse to the rhythm of something else. So I was asking on Twitter for recommendations of things like that. But to get a head start, I went on the review archive of a writer called Philip Sherburn, who is like Pitchfork's main dance critic. And I saw a picture of this album cover by Sophia Kennedy and I remembered him saying really good things about it. So I put it on. On your preferred streaming service, it is available. It was not what I was looking for, primarily because it has vocals in it and I can't really work to that, but it is so my thing in so many other ways. She sings in this way that's like weird mutated Tin Pan Alley singing, which also reminds me of the way that Victoria Wood sang her daft piano songs. It is theatrical and weird. There are other parts of the record that remind me a bit of the way that the Avalanches cut up sound. There's also something quite touching about this song. It's about like being special is, I think she sings something like, if you're special, you're lonely. If you're lonely, you're special, or something like that. Yeah, I really, really love it. I need to spend more time with the record, but I would recommend that you get into it as well.
I also checked it out on your recommendation and I really like it. Always like that moment where you're listening to something and you just go, oh, this is different. This is someone. I don't know. Yeah. I don't even know what the signifiers of this are. I don't know what's going to happen if I keep listening to this and where we're going to go. And I like that.
Me too. This brings us to the end of another episode of Unbreak My Chart. As ever, thank you very much for listening. You can email us at unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com. And as you can hear, we really love to hear from you. Please also do leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks so much to everybody who's been doing that over the past couple of weeks. It is much appreciated.
If you want to listen to any of the songs we've discussed in this week's podcast, we've put the best ones in a Spotify playlist, which, as always, is linked to in the show notes.
And you can find us both on Twitter. Fraser, you are...
@CSI_popmusic.
and I am at Laura Snapes. Our producer is the very fine Tay Mawson, and we'll see you next week. Tell your friends. Thanks.